Welcome to the Assembling Inclusion Podcast. On this show, we feature different programs, individuals, and initiatives focused on being more inclusive of individual needs. We invite you to learn right alongside us. If you want some additional resources or access to our courses, please visit our website or follow us on social media. But for right now, let's get right to the episode. Welcome back to the Assembling Inclusion Podcast. Today, we're joined by Shell Mendelson, who recently authored the book, A Course for ADHD Adults and Teens, Unlock Your Career Path. So, Shell, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Katie. It's lovely to be here.
So, before we start talking about the book that you wrote and all the work you do, I really wanted to focus on your background and your experiences so our listeners can get to know you. So what drew you specifically to specialize in career counseling for adults and young adults with ADHD?
Well, to be clear, my background is I've been in the world of career from the time I got my master's degree many, many years ago to now. And I've just taken paths, started a company in between. I have done so many different things within the realm of the, I call it education that I do, the career counseling and coaching. It's in the realm of education. And I've been doing that for, taken many twists and turns, started out as a voc rehab counselor for almost 35 years. I started out working with people with disabilities in voc rehab, if you're familiar with that. And I work with all, you know, physical disabilities, mental, emotional disabilities. And I'm sure there were quite a few people with ADHD that I worked with. However, at the time, I wasn't diagnosed, so I wouldn't have been able to recognize. And it was not a clear diagnosis that I was working with. I've been working with ADHD people for a long time without really knowing it half the time. But yeah, I've been doing this work forever. I love it. This is what I hope for my clients once they get on their path, that they never leave, that they have their field like of education or whatever theirs is. It may not be education, it might be something else, but that will start them off on a clear path to doing what they truly enjoy, feel fulfilled by, and are excellent at in every way.
And you had mentioned a little bit in there about how you were diagnosed later on in your life with ADHD. So I was wondering, how has that shaped your approach to career coaching and career counseling?
I was diagnosed in 2010. And don't forget, I had been doing this work for 20 years before that. And I was undiagnosed. I had started a company. I had done so many different things. But when I had the actual diagnosis in hand, and I started recognizing that I'm not alone, which a lot of people with ADHD will recognize. And some of us feel out of sorts. We're always trying to figure it out. And how do you figure square self into a round peg and do it like so-and-so does it? I don't know how they do it. How come they can do it and I can't? All of that. Once you get that diagnosis, it can set off all kinds of good alarms. And also some sadness about not knowing, you know, that this was going on all this time and that you could have done things quite a bit differently, managed things differently. And then everything starts to make sense about why things may have gone the way they did. And that was certainly true for me. And so once I got the diagnosis and I had been doing this work, I said, oh my gosh, these are the people I need to be working with. And I just completely honed in on working with my tribe. That was it to me. I've never looked back. Occasionally, I will work with neurotypical people, but rarely at this point, rarely.
Oh, yeah. And it's probably important that, you know, the people that you're working with, it's great to have somebody who understands so you feel less alone during the process. I'm sure that's helpful for everybody that you're working with.
Yes. In fact, some people, when they start working together in the masterclass, which I do, it's an 8-week course that takes you through this process. And they form like an outside group, and they are very often the first encounter they've had with other people with ADHD. Not always, but, you know, often it's true. And then certainly it's the first time they've been with other people who can recognize their own journey and the things that have tripped them up over the years. and made things very difficult for them. And that's a big revelation of people working together in this process. It's different.
So before we dive into your book, I did want to talk about what are some of the common misconceptions that you've encountered with regard to ADHD and career development? How do you address these misconceptions and help people navigate that pathway toward a career with more confidence?
Big misconceptions are that there are specific kinds of jobs that people with ADHD do or should do, or the top 10 or whatever. No, that is not true. It's very individualized. Everybody's interests are different. The thing that we share that are the same are the characteristics of ADHD and those things that have impacted us. But as far as who we are and what our interests are, it's different as the next person, right? So it's no different in terms of, you know, identifying what's best for you for a person with ADHD, with the exception that there's some things like we go into self-accommodation or accommodation and working conditions. We dive much deeper into that. But the truth is that, and this is really true for everyone, is that you do your best work when you're doing what you enjoy and you feel fulfilled and you make less mistakes and you can be productive and you don't have to worry so much about all those characteristics because they tend to fade quite a bit when you're doing something that you really enjoy. I'm sure anybody listening to this is going to recognize that. That is not, you know, brain surgery. That is not like a new discovery. It's really true. And so anybody who tries to tell you, you should do it this way or do it that way, they're off. It's really up to the person. And the only things that really trip them up, and the thing that we focus in a little bit different with our group, is really diving into what are those voices telling you? How are those outside influences impacting you to make a different choice, right? And to make a choice that's more status quo. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So instead of the status quo, we often have to go off and do something very different. We have to do it differently. We have to, you know, subjects that we're interested in will overlap. Our paths will spring from the nuances that occur along the way. But we got to lay that foundation first. And that's what we do. What I do with people is lay that foundation and build it from there. And then the path starts to kind of clear as you go through the process and the cream starts rising to the top. So when you say, what are the misconceptions that you encounter, that we're different that way, that we have to have certain kinds of jobs or it has to be a specific kind of way. No, there are just certain things that we have to look at and be aware of and understand about ourselves.
I love that so much. As you were answering that, I thought about like meetings I used to have with some of my students who had ADHD, and it was always, well, what are they going to do in the future? And you're right. Anything. They could really do anything they want.
They could do anything. Anything they want, literally.
Whatever they're passionate about.
And that's the key. That's the key. More so, I think, for people with our brain wiring, because it's not that it's not important for literally everyone, but some neurotypical people are able to play the status quo game for longer, sometimes to the point of retirement. You know, then they get on that thing of, I'm going to retire no matter how much I hate this job. And I always use my cousin as kind of a cautionary tale, who literally died from doing that. And he was a very neurotypical, and he ended up getting pancreatic cancer and died 2 years after his retirement. But he would not leave that horrible, horrible job that he hated so much. And I begged him, please leave. But he was so set on getting that retirement, and it really was about the money. And I understand that, but, you know, in every other way, he was healthy. During the time that he was working for this company, he was miserable and he was taking all kinds of medications and he was having all these different physical things going on. And so this is my cautionary tale. And sometimes what I like to say about people with ADHD is that we're actually lucky in terms of knowing that we will not thrive if we're not doing something we are feeling fulfilled and enjoy doing. As simple as that, we will not thrive. You know, it might last for a while. You know, some people are better at it. Fake it till you make it. But at some point, you're going to hit a wall.
So leading into, actually, that's a perfect segue into what part of your work specifically inspired you to turn everything you were doing with career counseling into your book, A Course for ADHD, Adults and Teens Unlocking Your Career Path?
That happened just recently. I was using What Colors Your Parachute workbook, like a specific edition that Richard Bowles had written before he died in 2017. And the final edition of that, which was much more available and easy to access. The one that I was using was becoming less and less, but I refused to use the other one because it's like his voice was gone in that one. And I knew him. I loved him so much. I think he was one of us. He was like me. He was probably undiagnosed, but he had so much creativity, so much wit, so much talent and insight. One of the reasons why I just always loved what I did was because it was, you know, that work inspired me, like it inspired him. But afterwards, it just dried up in terms of the way that it was presented. And even today, I don't particularly love the way it's presented. So I was moving away from it. The other thing was, is that over the years, I had to tweak it so much and I had to gerrymander and I created so many new exercises and documents that were visual, they were graphic, they were colorful, they were ADHD friendly. They were all the things that we need and thrive on and the things that keep us engaged, right? So that was so important to me. I knew that for myself, I needed to have all these things to keep me engaged. So over the years, I created them and I finally said, oh my gosh, I've got to do something now. I mean, I just have to create something that is really in line with everything I've been doing. And I had no idea what I was doing, seriously. Like with anything I've ever done, I just kind of go out there and do it if I'm inspired and then kind of figure it out later on. That's like how I do things, essentially. And with the book, it was starting to come together and I was getting inspired to do things a certain way. And I realized that I didn't want to copy the book, but the process itself is very, very much the same idea of breaking things down and uses some of the same types of exercises and tools, although I've renamed them. I didn't want it to be like a complete copy of it. So I actually called Richard Bull's wife, who I knew, like I had met her. I went to several workshops at his house and I met her before he died. She and I started talking. We got to know each other a little bit and I told her what I wanted to do. And she had actually asked me to help write the next volume. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. I can't. And she said, I was really one of the few that were really carrying on his work in a way that she really thought was the way it should be because it was her husband and she was very involved. And so she introduced me to the people at the publisher and she had the editor. I talked to one of the editors and she pushed it. You know, she introduced me to the president of the publishing company and said, I really want you to consider this because this needs to be done for the ADHD community, for neurodiversity. I did a whole pitch with the editor and she loved it. And she said, this is really great. I'm going to present it to my board. She did, and they turned it down. And you know what? My first response was relief because I realized I don't want to do it like that. And they're not going to like what I do with it. They probably aren't going to even want to spend the money it takes to print it because the printing is fairly expensive. I want it spiral bound so that everything lays flat. And I want the pullout in the back so that it can be torn out and laid flat on a desk. If I'm inspired to do it, I'm just going to do it until it's done, right? I love the fact that I was able to do it the way I want to do it. And it's done pretty well. I just launched in January. I can't believe it. It's really going pretty well, actually. It was the next branch on my tree, which is one of the models I use in the book for developing your path, right? Mm-hmm. So the tree trunk is essentially your foundation, like education is for you. Education is also for me. Some people might have food, like, you know, people that are foodies, they're working as tech people doing something obscure, right? But really their life is about food. And so when they finally decide to make some kind of a shift, it doesn't mean they're going to all of a sudden become a chef, but there are different paths that they can take. So for me, I have different branches on my tree. Theirs could look like, you know, creating recipes and putting like a little book together to start out, or maybe taking some classes, but that is really the path that they need to take. And that was actually true for me. And the book was one more branch of my tree.
I love the tree metaphor, because as I was thinking about that, I thought about even like my own branches and how everything is connected in some way to one grounding principle. I can picture myself filling out the little pieces of the branch, and it's so cool how pathways shift. And I wanted to ask you about, you talked about the What Color Is Your Parachute and adapting the flowers model, and then you transitioned to the planets. So what is the big overall difference between the flowers versus the planets? I like the planets visually. I think it is very pretty to look at, but beside that.
Well, that's how our brains are. We got to have something visual, right? So we took a long time to put this together. It came in many iterations. But the biggest thing is, number one, it's a pullout in the book. So it's 11 by 17 and it's perforated. So you can actually pull it out, lay it flat and use it. In the other book, you know, there's a big crease and then you had to like, it just doesn't work. But the other big difference is that in each one of the planets, first of all, the way they're presented, like number one is different than my number one. The way I presented, and I've always presented the class, is different from the book. Like I would always start with skills, which is in the book number three. And in my book, it's number one, because identifying your skills is so important to lay the groundwork and to start to get excited about it. And so I changed the whole formation of it that way to make more sense with how I was teaching the class, because that was where I had to gerrymander. That was one of them. So that can be confusing to people. Like, why are you starting with number three as number one? The other thing was, it ends up with life purpose, but it makes sense to have life purpose at the end after you've actually gotten to know who you are. You know, you've gone through this process and you've gotten to know what's really important to you and what your must-haves are, right? Everything has changed as far as the formation of it, but actually in each one of them, I emphasize some things very differently than are in the book. So for example, on the people planet, characteristics of people I prefer to work for, and then I have another part about with. So I separated working for instead of it all being the same. So I did more separation and more explanation of how to use the planets to really make sure that everything's there and you're not going to just feel like you have to fill this thing out and that's it. There's always more to it. And I always encourage people, if the planets doesn't work, make up your own. Find some other way that works for you. Like if it's squares, if it's triangle, you know, whatever works for you, as long as you use it, the process is still the same. The questions, the information is still the same. So I wanted it to tap more into the real specific stuff that we need. We need to have things broken down a lot more. We can't take anything for granted. And even now I see there's parts that I wanted to put in there in the next edition. I mean, you can always improve on it, of course. Also, the book has a third chapter that isn't in the workbook that we use. And that really explains all the different ways you can pull this information together. What works for you? Does this work for you? If that doesn't work, scrap it. Does this work for you? We need a lot of ways until we get it, right? And it's a process of repetition. So when you see things repeated over and over again, that's important to note. I like to use metaphors. So there are a lot more metaphors in there. Like the tree came out of my head. I was always trying to think, how do I explain this? Because it's not really explained in the other books, right? So I said, how do I explain this visually? So the tree trunk kept coming up for me. And so that's why that happened. I also would say to myself, the cream rising to the top. You know, you start out here and then ideas start coming up and you start sifting and sorting. And all of a sudden, a couple of really strong things come out that you can no longer push down if you've been doing it all your life. You have to acknowledge them and see that there is some way that you can make it work in the world of work. It may not look exactly the way you think it's going to look. It may look a little different to start out, but you can't ignore these things. They're still going to be there. And they're also going to cause you problems. I think that's tragic, honestly.
Yeah. It's a hard way to continue on with life when nothing fits.
That's tragic to me. I mean, my work is like a hobby. I love it. I could be doing this and talking about it all day, every day. It's just something that I love. I don't know. There has to be elements of what's really fun, the things that are fun and make you happy and make you dance for joy and everything. There have to be elements of that in there.
I definitely agree with that. I did want to talk about your leading into that, I guess I should say. Your book does seem to emphasize the idea of like evolving career paths. We talked about the tree, which I love a good visual, so I always appreciate that.
It's a good visual, yeah.
How does the concept of a career galaxy help readers kind of embrace this personalized, evolving roadmap for their professional journeys?
Well, people need to work in a way that allows them to expand, to explore, to be creative, have flexibility, continue to learn and grow, and most of all, to have purpose, right? There needs to be a purpose. Like people in my tribe, my ADHD tribe, we're purpose-driven, so many of us. And that's where the breakdown comes in the workplace, when no part of our purpose is being addressed in the workplace. And so this addresses the expansiveness of one's career and where it could potentially go in the future versus a job, you know, or I'm going to become a doctor, a lawyer, without knowing anything about those fields. It's just something somebody told you should do, kind of thing.
I appreciate that because I even think back to my own journey, and I'll be honest, I picked educator kind of on like, I like to learn. I'm going to go be a teacher because I could learn forever and that's awesome. And then I got in the fields and it was like, I love technology, specifically in special education. And like, let's go this pathway. Even my students get in the mindset of like, this is what I'm going to be. And it's going to be this way forever. And it's like, no, it'll evolve. It can change.
It will evolve. You will expand. You will grow. And your tree trunk needs to be big enough to allow for that. And education is mine as well. I always say that I'm a counselor, a coach, an educator. There's an exercise that when you were talking, it reminded me of, it's like one of the first exercises in the book where it asks you to kind of go back to when you were a kid, like 7, 8, 9. And what are the first memories of the things that you enjoyed doing? Like, what were you attracted to as a kid? And when I was 7 years old, I loved playing school. And I would force my little brother, my little four-year-old brother, to be my student, right? So he'd have to sit there and I pass out the paper and I had my dad gave me a chalkboard for Christmas with an eraser. And so for years, I thought I needed to be a teacher, right? In your mind, you think teacher, public school, you know, you think of certain ways that people become teachers and it's very limited. You don't think of teaching as a whole, like inspiring, uplifting, imparting information. You don't think about different ways that you can be doing that. You just think of, this is what I see as a teacher because that's all I know. I mean, I go to school and there's my teacher, so that's what I should be. And for years, that's really what I thought I should be. For years. And I got my teaching credential, actually. And I got out there in the field a little bit and realized I did not want to be teaching in that way. It wasn't for me. I didn't like it. So it really took me on a different path. That's kind of what started me. But I did realize that I love the skill of teaching, using that skill.
So I'm sure that you have a lot of stories of individuals that you've worked with who have transformed their careers with your guidance and support. But could you share a story that really kind of resonates with you?
One of my favorite stories is of a guy that was in my Your Next Career Move Masterclass. And he, I hope if you hear this, I love you. Anyway, he came in, he was working for a bank, and he was like an underwriter doing some banky kinds of stuff. It wasn't him. The work, I think, was okay to a certain extent, but it wasn't his environment. He had crazy hair and he was always being made fun of and that kind of thing. And he was more of an artsy-ish kind of person. But this is what he did. He came in very skeptical and worried about money, right? Which a lot of people do. They come in like, how am I going to make a living at this? And during the course of the class, somebody sent him a job opening with a movie company in the production department. And his tree, we were doing the flower model at that point, but his general subject was arts and entertainment because he loved building sets. He would do that on the side, or he had done it and he found that he got totally engaged in it, loved it. And he was in that area. So there was actually a job where he could take the skills that he had already and work in, of all places, the production department, which builds the set. I remember him saying if he hadn't been kind of pushed, gently pushed to do it like an informational interview versus a job interview, he would have passed it off thinking he'd never make the money, right? So it was so funny. He actually did it and ended up going through the whole interview process, getting the job. So now he's out of the bank and working for a movie company, right? In the production department. And guess what? He's making 40% more. And he's around all the people that make the sets, and he's able to get the contacts and network, make the connections. The last I talked to him, he was still kind of moving into different aspects of what he was doing. But he also found that the actual role that he had allowed him to be more creative, even though there was a lot of the same, you know, spreadsheet-y kind of stuff going on, financial stuff. Some of the work he was doing allowed him to be a little bit more creative.
That's amazing, though. That's great that he found an opportunity that really he connected with.
Very often people do come in thinking, how's this going to work? With the class, I say it takes about 3 weeks, 4 weeks before, do not even begin to make any judgments on this for at least that period of time. And then see what's coming up for you. You know, people go into their safe, we call it safekeeping self mode, where all the voices in your head are coming in telling you, this isn't going to work. Have you tried this? Have you tried that? What about this? You're so good at that, right? That will take you back to the status quo every single time. We're addressing it the whole way through.
The voices are hard to overcome. I know I am dealing with them all the time. As well as I make decisions and moves, they're always there. I did want to ask you specifically, well, because you know I'm in the world of K-12 education and I always like to bring everything back to teaching. But what advice would you give to, let's say, schools like high schools or university career centers who are looking to better support the people with ADHD that they're working with?
Can I just say, give them the damn book?
Yes, that's perfect.
Books should be like available for everyone. It should be, they should have stacks of it, and just the counselor should be passing it out to all their ADHD students. And if they need to work through it, recommend that they do it in groups for accountability, or recommend that if the counselor wants to do it with them, they can do it with them. I've done a whole instruction manual for teachers, but basically this book was meant for, this is what it was meant for. It was meant for teens, typically before they get out of high school, sometime between junior and senior year. And then certainly if they haven't done it before college, before they choose a major, for gosh sakes, why do you want to choose a major and then end up with nothing and still wondering what the heck you're supposed to be doing? College is too expensive to be doing that. When I went to school, it was almost free, right? It was practically free when I went to school. Certainly community college was free, But I always tell people, oh boy, you don't have to go to a university right away. Go to a two-year college, because when you move on to the next one, that's what counts. That's where you graduate from. But the community colleges are set up for the first 2 years, so you actually get a better education. Whereas the universities are not. They're more focused on the second 2 years.
They're pushing you for your major right away. And if you don't like your major, you're a year in, at freshman year, you're done. And you're like, oh, I hate what I'm doing.
They love it. They love it when you switch majors. There's nothing more that they would rather have you do than switch a major.
That's another year right there. You have to repeat.
Your year, maybe 2 years. Mm-hmm. Seriously, how expensive is that? How much debt does that add? If you don't have somebody helping you out, or if you have to pay for this on your own, which a lot of people do, and they take out these loans, well, then you get the predatory lenders, and don't get me started. But I like to see people knowing what they want, being able to articulate what they want, have a clear picture of what they want, see a path for themselves somehow, know where to start. And sometimes it may not even be college. I mean, when they go through this whole thing, they might say, dang, you know, I could do like 3 or 4 certifications and do exactly what I want. Or I could get an internship in something while I'm taking a few classes and know more if this is what I want. Or there's so many ways to go that don't involve necessarily signing up for 4 years of incredible debt for some people.
I like that you're focusing not just on you're going to do this and it's going to lead to a 4-year university option, because that's not for everybody.
Some people do, you know, some of the 2-year programs are great, by the way, and very work focused. Mm-hmm. And they may be a first step in maybe starting a business of some kind. Just doing the 2 years in on getting some expertise in a certain area. There's so many ways to go. So many ways. The main thing that's important is to know what you want and be able, again, to articulate what you want and say, this is what I want clearly. If you ask most people in the work world right now what they really want, how many do you think can say, oh, I want A, B, C, D, and E, you know? I want to work in this kind of environment. I want to use these skills. I want to work with these kind of people. These are the subjects I love. Who can say that?
Very few people.
Very few. Very few. That's why I finally wrote the book.
So anybody listening, if you're like, yes, I need to do this right now, go into the show notes and make sure you buy the book, because I definitely would recommend it. And kind of to wrap up, I wanted to know, aside from the book, how can listeners learn more about you and your coaching work and connect with you?
So the thing that inspired me to write the book was doing the 8-week Your Next Career Move Masterclass. So anybody who's ready to really dive in, because we use the book in the class, but there's much more in terms of doing a deeper dive and getting some real, you know, coaching along the way and working with other people, building that network. So that's the thing I generally have been talking about for the past year. Now I have the book for people who can't really afford that, because it's going to be, you know, expensive for some people. But the book is a good thing to have to get started on, to just get the process started for yourself. So the way to do that, you can find me at careercoachingwithshell.com or passiontocareer.com. Either one, passiontocareer.com, but I prefer Career Coaching with Shell because it's more specific to me. You can get the book when you click on my website directly, and you just click on where it says course book. You can also get it on Amazon.
I'm going to make sure to link all of those things in the show notes for everybody listening. But I want to thank you so much, Shell, for being here with us today to talk to us all about the work you're doing with building a career path for individuals who have ADHD. I appreciate all the work you're doing, and I'm excited to hear more about what's coming in the future.
I also want to say one thing. Now, mm-hmm. This is specific for people with ADHD, but I think you can tell it's for everyone. Anyone can use it. It's broken down in a way that it really will serve the whole population. But for people with ADHD, it's a must-have. So
awesome.
There you go.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Katie.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Assembling Inclusion Podcast. I hope the information in this episode taught you something new, gave you a new idea, or showcased a new perspective. If you liked the episode, feel free to leave us a review or comment. If you have a recommendation for an individual or an organization who would make a great guest, you can message us or send us an email at assemblinginclusion@gmail.com. See you next time.